Welcome to Radio Times. If you have an American passport, it's not going to get you very far if you want to travel this summer. The EU says that Americans are not welcome because of our high rate of coronavirus infections. Canada is closed to us for the same reason. Now, some countries like Turkey, Serbia, Tanzania, South Korea, and some islands in the Caribbean want American visitors, although the CDC advises against non-essential international travel because it increases the chance of getting and spreading COVID-19. Even some states are asking domestic travelers from hotspot states to self-quarantine before coming for a visit. So what's a person who has wanderlust supposed to do when so much of the world is closed because of the pandemic? Well, it turns out there are options. You just have to take steps to stay safe and to protect yourself from the virus. Let me introduce our two guests. Elaine Glusak is a freelance travel writer based in Chicago, and she writes the Frugal Traveler column for the New York Times. Elaine, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Carlos Del Rio. He's a distinguished professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine, also executive associate dean for Emory at the Grady Health System. And Carlos Del Rio, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Delighted to be with you.
Although we don't normally have an epidemiologist on this show when we talk about travel, but nonetheless, this is the world that we are in. And to our listeners, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Elaine, let me begin with you. What has it been like to be a travel writer under the pandemic when so much of the world is shut down?
A travel writer that really knows her office very well. Exploring
right.
The four corners of the office. But, traveling far and wide through the internet and basically spending a lot of time reporting on the industry and what's happening. Regulations are changing daily. And as you noted, quarantines among states seem to be popping up. It's like whack-a-mole trying to keep up with them. Yeah. So it's actually been a fairly busy time. The industry is really under a lot of pressure, and there's enormous need and unemployment in the industry, and as travel sort of starts to tick back, it's interesting to see what is happening, and so we're following along.
Well, let me follow up with the question about the travel industry, which of course includes the airlines and travel agents and Airbnb and hotels and restaurants and everything. How have they been faring over the last couple of months?
Oh, it's dire. If you talk to industry executives, they will tell you that they are, one of the hardest hit in this pandemic and recession that we're in. The U.S. Travel Association says unemployment in the industry is 51%, which is enormous. And they're expecting losses of $500 billion this year. So it's pretty dire.
Let me turn to you, Carlos Del Rio. And as I said, we don't normally have an epidemiologist who talks to us about how to travel in the world. But it seems that the sort of basics of wearing a mask, socially distancing, washing your hands, some sort of really basic preventive measures, that seems to be a way to at least open up the world. But it seems that people, at least in this country, too many people are reluctant to engage in those behaviors. What is going on there?
Well, so first start by saying that, yes, the travel industry has been hit significantly. But I would say that when I think about travel industry, when I think about, for example, airlines have made their life around passenger safety. And if you think about how, even when I was younger, in my 50, 60 years ago, airline, crashes were not uncommon, and people dying in planes were not uncommon. But then the airlines really started working a lot on safety, and I think they made safety very important. So most of us get in a plane and feel pretty safe, right? I tell people that I feel it's more of a risk driving to the airport than actually flying a plane, because I have a higher risk of dying driving than once I get on the plane. So I think the airlines are taking COVID with the same approach. They're thinking about safety, and they've done a lot of things. Most airlines have now mandated masks on board the planes, and if you don't have a mask, you don't get on the plane. No different than if you don't put your seatbelt, the plane is not going to move. Many of them are, trying to keep social distance. They've done a lot of changes in their airflow. They've done a lot of things in cleaning. So I think, honestly, I think planes are pretty safe right now. If I was traveling on a plane and I'm going to do it in a couple of weeks, I put a mask. I probably also have a face shield or goggles or some sort of eye coverage, because again, when I'm in a closed environment in a very contained environment with a lot of people, I think it's important to also have eye protection. And I would, at the airport, I would maintain social distance, and I would basically clean my hands. And if you do that, you can be pretty safe traveling on a plane.
Well, Elaine, let me get you back in on this, because you have written about what air travel has been like for people like Carlos Del Rio. And it seems it runs the gamut in certain ways. And yes, airlines are requiring things like masks. And who sort of polices that? Is it the flight attendants?
Yeah, I mean, that's what seems to be surfacing is there's non-compliance by some people, and those incidents, you know, are very publicized, and they threaten, you know, the health of everyone on board, crew and other passengers, and so they make the news. I talked to Sarah Nelson, who's the head of the Flight Attendants Union, and she told me that it is where most people are compliant. You know, they just want to go from point A to point B safely. But the problem is it's not a federal mandate. So, like, you know, the FAA requires you to wear a seatbelt and, you know, not get up when the seatbelt sign is on and not not congregate in the aisles. Those things are mandated, so it's easier for them to enforce, and people are pretty compliant. But the mask wearing is as the doctor said, required by airlines, but it's not federally mandated. So they feel that it would be very helpful if there was some sort of directive from the government that they had to, you know, lean back on. Otherwise, I think many of them feel like referees in the air. And, you know, we all know it's pretty difficult when you're all crammed into, you know, this flying metal tube and you're arguing with someone who's being unreasonable. That's the problem.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I think we definitely need a federal mandate on this. I mean, I think it makes total sense. And,
sure. And
you know, yes, I think, you know, the way that mask and face coverings have been politicized is actually very counterproductive, right, in controlling this epidemic. And I think the results show.
Absolutely. I mean, you're living that in Georgia, right?
Oh, we're living it in the world, right? I mean, we're living it globally. I mean, it's very unfortunate, but you see where we are, right?
Elaine, let me go back to, as you said, you know, we're crowded into a flying tube, and it often feels like that. What about, though, the hated middle seat? How are airlines distancing people when they obviously want to get as many people in the airplane as they can and hopefully start making a little bit of money?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think it's something for travelers to really look at when they're looking to book a flight. Some airlines, you know, notably Delta, JetBlue, and Southwest are, you know, saying we will block middle or adjacent seats to give you more space, whereas American and United are, they will fill their planes as demand allows. And so people have, you know, we've seen people in the air, you know, sort of upset that they have no space. The airlines do say that if there's room aboard, you know, you can move around. We've seen some pushback on that, and, you know, there's been conflicting policies where, you know, I talked to one flyer who was told that she could not move to an exit row seat, although it was open, because it cost more and she would have to pay.
Oh, wow.
Now, American Airlines, you know, I clarified with them. They said, no, that's not our policy. Other flyers told me it is their policy. They heard it over the public announcement, you know, system. And United, I followed up with American again, and they said that they went back to their attendants on July 10th to clarify, yes, people can move. So I want people listening to this, know you can move. You know, you should maybe talk to the flight attendant about it and make sure it's not a weight and balance issue, but you should be able to move. And those airlines, American and United, are both notifying flyers when flights are getting above 65% capacity in case they're worried about it, and they're allowing you to change your ticket.
All good to know. Carlos Del Rio, let me go back to you. And there was some question about this COVID-19, whether these were droplets, whether it was aerosol. There was some question about where the WHO stood on this. What should we know about that? And was this question resolved? And does it matter?
Well, you know, I think we've learned a lot of things lately about transmission. And I would say that most of the transmission is person to person through large droplets. When we're speaking, when we're breathing, when we're singing, we're all producing different kinds of droplets. One are respiratory droplets that are between 5 and 10 micrometers in diameter, and we call those, you know, droplets. And that's how this virus is mostly transmitted. Now, when I'm speaking, when I'm singing, when I'm, I'm also producing some small droplets, and those are called aerosols. And it's not either or. Both are being produced at the same time, right? And the large droplets drop after about, you know, they're in the air for about, you know, 3 to 5 feet, maybe 6 feet, and they drop to the ground. And the aerosols can travel a lot farther, and it can travel a lot farther, especially when propelled by, for example, a wind or an air conditioner or something like that. We have learned that there's some transmission of this virus through droplet, through aerosols, in particular in closed environments. And that's why I say that if I'm in a closed environment like a plane, I would wear eye coverage. I would wear a face mask. I would wear goggles. But if I'm not in a close environment, the aerosols probably play a much lower risk. Probably are almost a no risk.
Elaine, have you been in an airplane in the last couple of months?
I have not, which is really unusual for me. I always go to my phone and look at my airline app to find out what's happening next and, you know, get excited about it. But I have not flown. I've just been talking to flyers. I have been doing some driving trips, so that's how I've been compensating.
And what has that been like for you to drive?
Well, driving
not that we're not driving, but yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, no. Driving trips, that seems to be the way that most travelers, you know, that's what most Americans are looking at this summer. It's, you know, it's affordable, it's accessible. You don't have to go that far to maybe, you know, really get a break from that routine and those four walls that you've been in for months. And we've been very strategic about it, just in terms of following public health guidelines. You know, anytime we go out, we wear a mask and, you know, we often take our own food, so we're not patronizing too many stores. You know, we've even foregone going into the convenience store at a gas station and just getting gas using, you know, gloves or wipes and then, you know, using rest areas. And I found rest areas in a couple of states are really well-stocked. They leave the doors open so you don't have to touch anything, and they have hand sanitizer. So it seems like it's been a pretty safe way to go.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about how to travel under the pandemic, and our guests are Elaine Glusek. She's a freelance travel writer. She's based in Chicago. She writes the Frugal Travel column for the New York Times. Carlos Del Rio is Distinguished Professor of Medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine, and we are talking about where to go, how to get there, how to stay safe. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moskowitz.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, talking with our guests about where to go when the pandemic has restricted so much of our travel. We're talking about the kinds of getaway trips that might work well in the midst of the pandemic and how to stay safe as we venture into the wider world. Let me read an email from Thomas, who says, how can your guest say air travel is safe when he says travelers should use face shields and goggles? A friend recently returned to Philadelphia on a flight from Montana, said they were packed in, there was no social distancing lining up to board and deplane, and many people took off their masks during the flight. Elaine, if I can just give you a chance to respond to that about sort of how this stuff gets monitored, and then Carlos, I'll get a response from you as well. Elaine?
Yeah, what the listener said is what we've been hearing. There isn't, you know, even if you block a middle seat, it's not true CDC 6-foot social distancing, and we know that. And so the airlines that have been blocking it are just making some, you know, as much accommodation as they can. And that's why, you know, masks and shields are so important otherwise. But they are allowed, airlines are allowing people to remove masks if they're eating or drinking. Yeah, it's a threat. I would see it as a threat. I personally would prefer to take a direct flight that's very short and perhaps not drink, you know, and maybe eat before I get on a plane. But I defer to the doctor on that one.
Sure. Go ahead, Carlos Del Rio.
No, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, what I say to your listener is, how do you say if it's safe? If, you know, I think if you are, you're wearing a mask during a flight because you want to be safe, right? So it's a little bit like, again, I go back to, you know, you put your seatbelt when you're flying because you want to be safe. I do agree that we need a federal mandate. I do agree we need better enforcement. Again, we need to, you know, somehow, and you started with this, somehow as a nation, we seem to be not taking this virus seriously. So there's a group of us that are taking this very seriously and are willing to take measures that, quite frankly, as I tell people, you know, wearing a mask is uncomfortable. It's not natural, but it's necessary right now because we're in the middle of a pandemic. But there seems to be a portion of the population which is not either not understanding what's going on or not getting it or simply just denying it. But the situation that we're in as a country as a result of that is really bad for everybody. Because when people say, can we travel? Can we, you know, open schools? Can we do this? Can we do that? It's really, the problem is that we have too much virus in circulation. If the amount of virus came down because we took better care of ourselves and we decreased transmission, it will be a lot safer. But of course, as more viruses in circulation, as more people are infected, the higher the risk that you're going to confront somebody who's infected themselves and the higher risk you have to get infected. So the reality is, if you think about total safety, don't travel. Don't leave your house. I mean, you really, that's the only way you can avoid infection. But right now, when you go to the grocery, here in Georgia at least, you know, I feel more unsafe going to the grocery store, quite frankly, where many people are not wearing their face masks.
Fair enough. Elaine, let me go back to you. And you talk about the kind of dire situation the travel industry is in. But I'm wondering whether that has opened up some cheap flights for people who do want to travel and are willing to take the risks and do what they can to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, that's been the travel industry's response to try to stimulate travelers, you know, to try to lure them with really low fares and really great hotel deals, you know, 2-for-1 offers and things like that. You'll see a lot of that, you know, in Mexico, for example, and Cancun, in some of the islands. If you are willing and you're willing to take all these safety precautions, there are really tremendous deals out there. But again, it's driven by the fact that they don't have enough business to really be sustainable yet.
And knowing, of course, how uncertain the pandemic is, if that flight gets canceled, do you get your money back? Is there a fine print that we need to know about?
Yeah, no, thank you for pointing that out. That's one of their enticements is to say, okay, we know you're worried about this. We're going to offer you a really good deal, and we're going to allow you to cancel and get your money back. So if anyone's thinking about doing this, you know, just make sure you check the cancellation policies. Most are still very generous, and that includes airlines and hotels, because they, you know, they know that you're you know, nervous about it. But most of them are offering generous cancellation policies. So if you do decide you want to go, you'd be safe and, you know, canceling at the last minute if, say, there's an outbreak in your community or you just got cold feet.
Carlos Del Rio, here's a Facebook comment from Gail, and I should say that for a lot of people living in the Philadelphia area, we go down, as we say, down the shore, which is down to the New Jersey shore, which, of course, is just, you know, lined with one beach after another. And Gail says, going down the shore with modifications, we'll probably not do the boardwalk at night, too crowded. We'll hit the beach on off hours, not sure about eating outdoors at restaurants, but we'll definitely do takeout. What should we know about going to the beach?
Well, you know, in general, if you're outside, you're better than if you're inside. So outside, it's a better place than inside. But of course, you know, if you're outside in a beach, in a very crowded beach, you know, it's not going to help because people are not going to be wearing face masks. So I would say, you know, you go outside, you go to the beach, trying to find a space or trying to find a time that there's not going to be very crowded. And if it's only going to be crowded, I think I would probably not go outside, not be there.
Really?
So I think avoiding, you know, avoiding the big seas, crowding, close environments, it's a really important thing to do.
And we've seen those pictures of crowded beaches and crowded pools, people really shoulder to shoulder, either on the beach or in the water. That must drive you crazy, Carlos Del Rio.
Well, again, I go back to what I was saying. I wonder what those people are thinking. I wonder what, you know, what is going through their mind as they're doing that. Do they really just don't care? And if they don't care, then, you know, you have to decide whether you belong to the people that care or the people that don't care.
I wonder, too, Elaine, about whether this pandemic offers us the chance to maybe explore places that are not so popular, where there might be fewer people, even thinking of beaches or lakes, you know, places where people can go to essentially get away from people.
Yeah, I mean, if I could say there's an upside to the pandemic, it's that people are spending more time outside. I talked to one outdoor industry association that said that before the pandemic, less than 20% of Americans spent time outdoors more than once a week. And now people are actually going outside, and we're finding that, you know, places that are remote are really selling out, you know, by any metric, like the like fishing licenses. The sales of fishing licenses in Vermont are up 50%. And companies like Airbnb are saying their biggest sellers are these really, really remote places like Prescott, Wisconsin, and the Appalachian foothills in Georgia. So people are, those that are traveling are really looking to get away, far away from other people. And they're doing it by going to very remote destinations, or maybe renting a house that's more rural, and where they have more control over their environment, or even renting an RV, where basically you have your house on wheels,
sure,
including your own kitchen and bathroom, and you have like control over that hygiene.
Elaine, I was even seeing the bike sales are up.
Yeah, bike sales, okay, were up 121% when I reported this in June, and now I'm hearing it's really hard to find bikes in shops. Partially because a lot of them are made in China and they're not coming over here. But, yeah, it's a good time to tune up your old bike.
Let me get Beth to join us on Radio Times. And Beth calling us in. And go ahead, you're on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My question or my comment is actually related to travel insurance. We had a situation. We purchased travel insurance in January when we booked a trip for England and Ireland with American Express Travel. And paid, and were very happy about it. When the time came for the trip, and I called or I sent in the information, the trip had to be canceled, obviously. It was in mid-May, in the middle of the lockdown and the quarantine in England. And when I called about it, sent my form in. I was told that it didn't qualify because it wasn't a quarantine. It was a lockdown, not a quarantine. And also, I was told by three different levels of responsibility as I kept up these calls that American Express Travel Insurance is not paying any COVID claims. So we're not only out the cost of our trip, but also the cost of the travel insurance. And despite continued calls to them, they told me that no travel insurance companies are paying COVID claims. So that's what my question has to do
sure.
with, first of all, my situation, but also, is that true, and how do they do that?
What's
happening
really,
to people with travel insurance?
Sure, it's such an important call. I appreciate it. And Elaine, if you don't mind, I'm going to toss that back to you.
Yeah, no, I've written about this extensively because, unfortunately, we've all learned the hard way the problem with travel insurance. Travel insurance is very specific. It covers various things, for example, that might happen to you before you leave on a trip, like you broke your leg and you can't travel, or you lost your job. And all of these things that it covers are actually laid out in the plan. And if it doesn't say it covers a pandemic or an epidemic or COVID-19, which, of course, didn't exist when, you know, the caller bought it in January, then it's not covered. So, legions of people who had trips canceled because of the pandemic found out, oh, well, my insurance doesn't cover it. And that's true at all of the major insurers that I talked to, from Allianz to Global Alliance. They don't cover it in case of COVID-19 because they'll say it wasn't in the list of things that we cover. So travel insurance, I found it's very, 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 very limited and very specific. And that's unfortunate. I'll say the one thing, and I don't know if the caller wants to go back to Amex, but some of the companies are offering premium refunds. So if your trip was canceled by a tour operator or something, and you can show that, take it back to the insurer and say, well, at least refund me the premium that I paid for this insurance that I'm not using.
Fair enough. Beth, I appreciate the call. And that's Elaine Glusek. She's a freelance travel writer. She writes the Frugal Travel column for the New York Times. Carlos Del Rio is with us as well. He's an epidemiologist, distinguished professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine. Both of them joining us today on Radio Times as we talk about travel, how to do it safely, and where to go. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us, as Beth did, 1-888-477-9499. Carlos Del Rio, a number of states, New Jersey being one of them, but there are a bunch of them now, are basically saying, even if you're coming from the United States from another state, we want you to self-quarantine for as much as 14 days before we let you into our state. First of all, I don't know how they police that, but do you see that as a way to mitigate the spread of COVID-19?
Well, you know, unfortunately, right now, we have in our country, we're in a very difficult situation. We have about 18 states currently that are what we call in the red zone. And in the red zone means states that have more than 100 new cases per 100,000 population in the last week. And they're pretty much in the south and in the west. So, you know, if you think about Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, there's no disease there. And you think about New York, Massachusetts, they're doing very well. But then you have areas of the country that have still high positivity, so a lot of transmission happening. Again, that's mostly in the south and in the west. So what many states are saying, well, you know, if you're coming from Florida, if you're coming from a state that has Georgia, that has a high transmission, and you're going to Montana, you need to isolate. You know, I think it, you know, it makes sense to ask for that. The question is, how do you enforce it? How do you ensure that that happens? I just tell people not to, I mean, be careful. I've seen too many mistakes happen in which, you know, the other day I heard about somebody who, you know, the son, teenage son, had some friends in Florida. They live up in Connecticut. And the son said, can I invite my friends from Florida to spend, you know, the week with us? And the parents said, sure, that's a really nice kids. Well, everybody in that family is now infected.
Oh,
so I think
we need to
really use our heads, and just because people are nice doesn't mean they're not getting infected. And prevent and realize, oh, you know, Florida has a lot of transmission. Probably your friends want to get out of Florida, but they may be infected. So we either need to get them tested, or they need to be masked at all times when they come visit. But they cannot be hanging around without us at this time. So I think we need to be careful when we travel, and we really need to be careful of how we mix with other people.
Elaine, let me just give you a chance to talk about the EU. Basically, shut the doors to American tourists. There are some, I mean, Turkey and some other countries that seem to be welcoming Americans, but what's the state of the world when it comes to American travelers?
It's quiet. You know, people with passports that are, you know, ready to, you know, want to go are just waiting and looking around and saying, where can we go? And it looked like the summer of the road trip. And then, you know, we had this big wave in the south and the west that has sort of put a dimmer on the whole industry again. But, you know, there are people that are just kind of waiting for the green light from some of the countries in Europe to go there in the fall. But we don't have any clarity on when that might happen. You know, even Canada, it would be so nice to go back to Canada again, but that's not open to us either. There are some countries, you know, in the Caribbean that definitely want Americans to come, but they also have pretty, you know, you have to come with a COVID test, or you have to take one when you get there. So they are trying to attract Americans, but they want to do it safely.
And I think I was reading in one of your columns, Elaine, that Barbados says, come and visit and come stay. Is that true? Come live here.
Yeah, which sounds really great.
I mean, it does.
I say, for a moment, you know, I'm like, I could write from there. But, you know, my family would hate that. But yeah, so some are actually saying, you know, we want you to come and stay for a long time. And I guess if you have that kind of flexibility and if you could, like, move somewhere and quarantine for 14 days and then live there for a while, sure, that'd be great. It's pretty hard for most of us to do.
Absolutely. Here's a Facebook comment from Susie who says, planning a driving trip to Maine in October. We'll stay in chain motels with strict procedures for cleaning rather than in independent places. A tweet from Pete, I went to camp in Vermont, but our county rates are too high, so they won't have us. So we're mostly staying, it looks like, in Pennsylvania, the Jersey Shore, where it's not too crowded. And I remember, Elena, a couple of years ago when there was this great thing called the staycation where people stayed home instead of going somewhere else. I assume that's becoming more popular.
Oh, yes, for sure. And your local, you know what, in Philadelphia wants you to stay home too.
Yes, I do.
You know, they want you to stimulate your own economy as part of it. And it's realistic, you know, it's a place you can go and have a little more control. You're not going too far and wide. But a lot of states are really just trying to appeal to, you know, their own residents or maybe people in neighboring states. There's a lot of vacations, and you'll find cities, for example, talking about what great outdoor destinations they are, you know. So it's the appeal has changed a little bit, but there's this concept of the new near, you know, there's a lot of things to explore. You know, you people who might have gone to Italy every fall, hey, you know, why don't you look closer to home and check out some of the woods and forests and lakes and parks that are nearby that you might have overlooked, and some sustainable tourism advocates say that this is a way that we can actually help boost our own local economies again.
Fair enough. Let me just take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about travel restrictions that are changing our vacation plans. What kinds of vacations might work well in the midst of the pandemic? How to stay safe should you decide to take that trip after all? Elaine Glusak is a freelance writer, travel writer. She writes the Frugal Traveler column for the New York Times. Carlos Del Rio, distinguished professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine. And we want to hear from you. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen talking with our guests about how to stay safe as we travel, take that summer vacation. Here's an email from Maria who says, what about the restrooms at rest stops on turnpikes, etc.? The machines that blow dry your hands, they've been shown to disperse other microbes into the air. How do you suggest dealing with that? Carlos Del Rio, can you address Maria's question?
Well, you know, again, the likelihood of the transmission through air, you know, there's some observations and events that pretty much give us an idea of how that may happen. There is an event in a restaurant in China, for example, in which an infected person was sitting on a table, and the people that got infected were all in the path of where the air from an air conditioner was pushing the air. But the people that were outside where the air was actually being blown did not get infected. So I think many places are not only looking at air filters and how you change the air, but they're looking at how the air is directed and how the air is blown and how you can maybe do indirect blowing of air. Because, again, floating particles in the environment is usually not the way this gets transmitted. It is when you have a blow of air that is blowing in a specific direction that you may get those aerosols that we're talking about.
If you, though, are wearing a mask, does that provide protection from Maria's example?
I think it does. But again, if I was in a close environment and I was with, you know, when it was low of air, I would probably also wear either a face mask or a face shield. Mm-hmm. I think eye protection will become useful in those situations, too.
And you mentioned eye protection several times. It's important to protect our eyes during the pandemic.
I think, again, if you're, you know, I do it when I'm seeing a patient, when I'm seeing patients with COVID, I wear eye protection. I think it's important to wear eye protection when you are in a close environment with a person that is infected. So if I'm in a room, if I'm in a close environment, I think it's important. I think if I'm outside, if I'm in, you know, in a park walking, I don't wear eye protection.
Here's an email from Warren. This is for you, Elaine. He says, a friend on a long sailboat trip just spent time in Glacier Bay and got a unique experience, no cruise ships, and only saw one other sailboat in 3 days. I guess that's the upside, right?
That is the upside. I mean, there's lots of places that are just, particularly with cruise ships. I mean, cruising is basically off the table until October for the most part. There's a few coming back before that, but it's, you know, Carnival isn't back until October. So there's a lot of destinations. So if you thought like, hey, I really want to go to one of these islands in the Caribbean, but I don't want to be there when, you know, 6,000 people come off one ship and maybe there's three ships in port, you know, like St. Thomas would be a good example of that. Much quieter now. You're going to have a much more, you know, it'll just be a very different experience. You won't have the hustle and bustle, and you won't have people like, you know, trying to sell you diamonds.
Right. Right, exactly. Here's a question from Greg. He says, I'm supposed to go on a hiking trip in the Grand Canyon in September. Is this a bad idea? Elaine, I'm going to toss that first to you, and then Carlos Del Rio get a response from you as well.
Well, I mean, it's outdoors. So, I mean, right. What we're finding is that people want to be outdoors, and public health, you know, authorities like Dr. Del Rio are telling us it's better to be outside than inside. I think, you know, you're probably not going to meet many people. The national parks are busy this summer because people are going there more. But the Grand Canyon has always been really good about regulating the numbers that are allowed there. So I personally feel like that's a pretty, you know, that sounds like a pretty appealing trip, and I would feel pretty good about it if I had, you know, my hand sanitizer and mask and so forth.
My memory from all those big parks, national parks out west, is that once you get about half a mile away from the sort of popular areas, there's almost nobody there. Yeah, it's almost empty. Carlos, you want to respond at all?
Yeah, no,
to
I agree.
Parks?
I mean, I think you need to think about where you're going, and I think if you can do something outdoors, I think it's better. If you can do something remote, I think it's better. You know, I think, again, I would avoid crowded places. I would avoid, you know, closed environments. I would avoid, you know, I would not go to places where there's going to be, you know, tons of people, because when I look, for example, about the beach resorts in the Carolinas, they're having significant outbreaks, and they're, you know, there's a lot of people there. A lot of it is probably not related to people necessarily being on the beach or in the swimming pool. It's people going to restaurants and to bars and to nightclubs after in the evening, and that's where infections are happening.
I wanted to, and Carlos Del Rio, let me send this back to you about people who are renting other people's houses. This is actually a personal question for me as well. Just making sure that as you go from one renter to another, making sure that that house has been safely cleaned, what should people look for?
Again, you know, I think we have learned a lot about how this virus is likely not transmitted in a significant way through inanimate objects. So I think you need to do a cleaning, but this virus is barely sensitive to soap and water. Mm-hmm. I think you just need to be sure that the cleaning was done. Now, the kind of cleaning we're talking about is maybe a little different than normal cleaning. You know, things that high-touch places need to be cleaned carefully and thoroughly. So, for example, door handles is something I will worry about. I worry about places that people touch a lot, right? You know, maybe in a place there's a coffee machine or there's a control for the television. Those are the kinds of things that you want to be sure that are clean.
Elaine, let me go back to you and talk a little bit about sort of hotels and Airbnb. You mentioned the fact that more sort of remote Airbnb seem to be doing very well. Is there a lot of competition now between hotels and Airbnb about what they're offering people under their concerns about the pandemic?
Yeah, I think as these two, as, you know, hotels and home shares sort of compete against each other, they're both staking out their ground as to, you know, why you, the traveler, should consider them. So hotels like, you know, Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, they all have very stringent cleaning procedures now. And, it's, you know, hospital-grade disinfectants and, you know, high-touch areas are being attended to. And, of course, they have all the social distancing stickers on the floor, and all the staff has got all the, you know, the eye shields and the masks on. So there's a lot of reassurance there, both visually and meaningfully, about the way that they're handling their environments. You know, but home shares are saying, well, you're still, you know, in the hallway or the elevator with strangers. And what we're offering is privacy and control over your environment. And companies like Airbnb have new, also have their own new cleaning protocols. And one of the most interesting is that they have a set of listings where you can, you know, where the house might have been vacated for 72 hours before anyone arrived, uh-huh. with the idea that if these droplets are in the air, they would have settled and wouldn't be infectious anymore. So, you know, both camps are doing what they can to try to reassure people, you know, that they are, you're not going to get it from us.
We're talking about travel amidst the pandemic, how to do it safely, where to go. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. A question from Ned, who says, how about road trips and staying in hotels on a long distance trip? Carlos Del Rio, just sort of generally speaking about that, anything that Ned and others should consider?
You know, I think that staying in a hotel, again, goes to the whole issue of, is not necessarily the room or the hotel you're staying in, is the people you run in contact with in the hallway, in the registration area, in other places. So just wear your face mask when you're with other people. Just, you know, wash your hands. I think it's, you know, I tell people the keys are what I call the W's, the three W's of wearing a face mask, watching your distance, and washing your hands. And if you do those things, you will be okay.
So basic, so simple, so, you know, so not difficult to do. I'm just remarking that we're still, what, months into this pandemic.
It is not difficult to do, but somehow we seem to be, you know, reluctant to change. And that's the problem. Yeah. I think, you know, change in behavior is very, very hard. But we have a serious issue in front of us.
Yeah. I mean, we tell people you can't smoke in a restaurant. I mean, there are things that we do tell people to do. And maybe it goes back to what you both were saying earlier, which is you need some kind of federal regulation so that there are no exceptions to what we're talking about. Carlos Del Rio?
I think you're absolutely right. I think if we have had one major failure in this pandemic, has been really the lack of leadership and the lack of direction. Too many people saying too many things, and unfortunately, I mean, we're not all rowing in the same direction, and it's really hard to advance a boat when that happens.
And Elaine, I remember when the EU first essentially said to Americans, yeah, we don't want you, and thinking, oh, well, that will pass. And now they've kind of doubled down on that. And it is kind of shocking to think that we're kind of persona non grata when it comes to a lot of the rest of the world.
Yeah, completely. Especially when you think about the fact that, you know, Americans, while, you know, a minority of us have passports and go abroad, we actually spend a lot of money abroad. So they Europeans really like American dollars, but, you know, they're just not willing to risk the health of their citizens when they can't be assured that, you know, we've been taking care of ourselves at home. But I will say one thing about road trips, though. I think that this is where the traveler needs to be very, needs to do a little planning, let's just say that. A lot of things are going to be very busy, but what we're finding is that places like motels where you sort of drive up and you don't have a lot of interior time are really popular. Also, tiny house resorts, you know, where you get your own little tiny house, or cabin resorts, places like that. I would say to any traveler doing a road trip to be maybe a little spontaneous and do a little more planning, just because you never know if also these resorts and hotels have capacity restrictions themselves. So if there's more people on the road and they can't sell every room, it behooves you to just kind of like maybe plot out your destination in advance.
And you're not going to be walking down a hall or in an elevator, right, if you're staying in a place like that.
Exactly. That's the whole idea of minimizing contact.
Carlos Del Rio, did you want to add to that?
No, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, I think a lot of it is using your common sense, right?
Right. Do we have any? And that's what I want to know. Elaine, let me go back to you. What is the future of group tours? And is there a future? And what might they look like?
Oh, they hope there is. I mean, and some group tours are back. Again, I think everything's been just a little bit slowed since we had this outbreak, in the South and West. But You know, companies like Backroads, which specializes in active travel, they started their group trips again. So, and the way that they're doing it is by making the group small, so like 10 or less, which, you know, kind of goes along with most, you know, many state guidelines for not gathering in large groups. And they're doing things like staggering meal times. They're doing a lot more outdoor dining, individually packed foods. This company in particular is outdoorsy, so they can kind of, you know, they can kind of set you off with a bike and you're good to go, and it's fairly safe. But some of these others that, you know, do bus tours, they are working on, decreasing the group size, you know, cleansing their buses, you know, requiring face coverings, things like that. I think a lot of these tour companies are hoping to come back in the fall with European travel, and that remains to be seen because, as you noted, we're still not allowed in Europe.
No, we're still not allowed in Europe. Carlos Arroyo, I'm just curious, and we obviously in this hour we're talking about travel, so that's a very specific conversation related to this pandemic. But is the vaccine, I mean, is that sort of what we're waiting for in order to be able to, assuming it works and people get the vaccine, that we can return to some degree of normalcy?
I think so. I think a vaccine is going to make a huge difference. And, you know, again, we need to get to what's called herd immunity, and a vaccine is going to help us do that. We don't need to vaccinate everybody, but you're going to have to vaccinate around 60% of the population to get there.
And how does that work? When you talk about herd immunity and the vaccine, just be a little more specific if you could.
What I mean by that is that if and when we have a vaccine, then you will be able to, if you vaccinate a certain percentage of the population, simply those people become, you know, resistant, no longer being able to be infected. And therefore, the number of potential susceptibles in a population decreases. As the number of potential susceptibles in a population decreases, then the virus is less likely to transmit. Right now, what we have, the challenge we have with this virus is two things. Number one, it's a very transmissible virus. And number two, there's a lot of susceptibles out there because even with all the disease we've seen in our country, less than 10% of the population has been infected. So 90% of people out there are still uninfected, which means that there's a lot of potential, susceptible individuals that could get infected. If those 90% that haven't been infected, you were able to decrease that to, you know, by vaccinating 60%, you will be able to bring that down to 30%, then all of a sudden transmission will dramatically decrease, right?
Right. I mean, certainly that is the hope. Elaine, are you waiting for that vaccine before you head out? I mean, this is your job to be a travel writer.
Yeah, it is my job. Yeah, I think, you know, I worry about long flights. I have plenty to do. I find, you know, the United States to be fascinating, and I am dearly hoping that Canada opens soon. I'm a big fan of Canada. I don't need to go that far to find stories. They are everywhere, and I think, this crisis is shining a light on what we have near us that is so dear. So I'm sort of a traveler in my own town. So I'm not discouraged in that sense.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm glad both of you joined us today on Radio Times. Elaine Klusak, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And she's a freelance travel writer. She writes the Frugal Travel column for the New York Times. Carlos Del Rio, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Times as well. Really helpful.
Delighted to be with you, and I hope we can get back to traveling. I love traveling, and hopefully it will happen soon.
Me too. I feel my wings have been clipped, but after this conversation,
exactly.
there are places we can go. It's a beautiful country that we have, so let's go exploring and do it safely. Carlos Del Rio, Distinguished Professor of Medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine. Bye, and thank you very much. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you so much for joining us.